Hey, I'm Tony Carr. I'm an alcoholic. Very proud member of the West Side Men's Group. I love AA and I love you guys. You know, I look around this room and think about the retreats, how we shared life. You know, we were talking about it the other night about pods, you know. I may touch on that. I prayed last night. God gave me a strong message and, you know, more God and less Tony Carr. And I thanked him this morning before coming for giving a strong message, because we really need less Tony Carr and a lot more God or higher power. So, you know, if I say God and you're in the process of higher power, just cross over the one with the other. Like, just like if your deal is narcotics and you're in an AA meeting, and you just cross over and you hear narcotics or, you know, crack or cocaine or whatever instead of alcohol. Same kind of concept, because I don't want to have your mind shut down at all, you know, by the word God or some of the words that I may choose. So I'm looking forward to see what he's got. I noticed Ed came up here and had 4 pages of notes all lined up for his talk. Thank you for your talk, and thank you, Stevie D, for your talk. So I brought 11 pages of nothing but the schedule for the you know, retreat, but I did want to show up like I was prepared. And thank you. So you know, I don't know about you guys, but my God has a great sense of humor, and you know, loves giving me opportunities to get entirely uncomfortable. And when I heard what my topic was going to be on today, I got entirely uncomfortable. I had multiple choices, but I couldn't deviate from one on relationships, and may intersect a couple of the other topics in it. But a lot of you guys know, because I've shared through the years, my struggle, with man woman relationships, and I'll touch on that. I'll touch on the struggle as asked in my meditation today to get brutally honest. And that means being very vulnerable, and I trust you guys and I love you guys, so that shouldn't be a problem. But, you know, my journey comes, and I'm not going to talk about alcoholism today. You guys know me. I qualify. I definitely earned a seat here. But growing up, I grew up, I don't use the term dysfunctional family because I don't know what a functional family is. I just grew up with a lot of chaos. We had mental health issues. My family, my older brother was bipolar, to the point of hearing voices and following things. And my sister was manic depressive, borderline bipolar. And if you don't know that environment, with my sister, who I loved very, very much, 1 second, you're the best brother on the planet. And 3 seconds later, you're the Antichrist. I mean, it's just, and my parents were doing everything they could just to kind of get those two through life. And how I interpret it is I'm a piece of shit. I'm not good enough. I'm never going to be good enough. I don't measure up. I'm never going to be measured up. I can't be heard. I can't be understood. I can't be, you know, important enough. I am not saying that's what factually happened. I'm saying that's how I interpreted that as a young man. And at 10 years old, I'd taken my dad, oh man, yeah, a lot of you guys met my dad. I was beautiful, bringing him to the West Side Men's Group and sitting around the cigar circle. And you know, he had all timers at that time, but man, he'd crack a joke or two every time together. Usually the same joke week after week, because he forgot he told it the week before, and it got funnier and funnier. And he loved you guys, and I know you guys loved him. And that was important for me to share that to you. And that point in his life, he was a very loving man. When I was younger, you know, Ed touched on it, you know, with his dad, he skipped red. He went from white to purple face. And when purple face, it didn't go red, it went purple with veins popping out. And you wanted to be anywhere other than in his presence at that time. And much like Ed, I was a perpetrator of a lot of the pain that I received. But very frequently, the pain was way too extreme for the situation. It's like I'm getting a beating for, you know, 6 or 8 of the other 10 kids. I'm one of 11. And at 10 years old, 11 years old, we'll say 11 years old, I'd taken a table leg. It was a U-shaped table leg. There were 4 of them. They had been in the basement so long they had moss, spider webs all over them and stuff. And I took one of those off and I put it in the vise and I hacksawed off the U part and I filed it down and I painted it black and bolted it to the wall. I made myself a towel rack because my room was in the basement. It's kind of dank and moist down there, so towels would go, you know, wouldn't dry. So I made a towel rack. My dad comes around the corner. with the U-shape. You have any idea what happened to that table? That thing had been in the basement for 12 years. I said, yeah, I made a towel. Bam! And he took that U. The U was in his hand, and the unfiled down ends came into my gut. And something snapped in me. That became one of the points in life where I stopped needing anybody at all. I got my jobs. I made my money. I bought my clothes. I set my schedule. I was gone all the time. And when I say I didn't need anybody, I'm telling you, I'm that guy. I'm happy to help you out. I'm happy to hear about your problems. I'm happy to listen to you. I'm happy to offer suggestions, but I don't need anybody at the end of the day. If you disturb me enough or hurt me enough, you are dead to me, and it's like a light switch. Boom. I don't think about you. You don't haunt me. You're eviscerated. Boom. Not exactly in line with good emotional balance, right? And I'm an every week churchgoer. You know, I'm part of the men's organization. I'm 22 years old. I'm teaching young Christian education, which I still think that was just, I can't imagine. I'm showing up on a motorcycle with dirty rugby gear on and all that stuff because of the timing. I had rugby practice and I'd show up and I'm teaching CCD and, you know, to ninth graders. So it's not that I don't understand the concept of God and all that. What I don't understand is the practical application of, you know, principles. I don't know how to live life rightly. I am, you know, the book talks about that, you know, if you know the loneliness of alcoholics in our lovely cup, right? I have a pretty good idea where a big part of my loneliness comes from, because I could be in a party of 300 people and, you know, feel like I'm the only person in that damn place. I can be surrounded by, you know, 20 acquaintances and friends. I use friends, and we'll talk about that maybe a little bit, but and feel very isolated and very alone, you know, with a smile on my face and a big old party. My go-to spot was drinking alone after entertaining people and all that stuff. So I was very much at the end of the day, a lone wolf, very much a guy who did not need anybody. And again, I'm happy to help you out because I want you to kind of need me, you know, and why am I lonely? I have created a character for you to think is Tony Carr. Had a lot of John Wayne mannerisms, had a lot of, you know, my words, my bond, you know, you went eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth kind of stuff. And I carried that on. I carried that well into sobriety. And I came into sobriety June 25th, 2006. I want to talk a little bit more about relationships than I do about, you know, my first round of recovery, but I got to point out a couple of things. Is one, I had talked about his first 3.5 years. I set about to check some boxes, and there are plenty of things that I'm willing to do, and there's a lot of things I'm not willing to do in recovery. And there are enough warning signs, there are enough people telling me what works, but see, I'm hanging out with people with little time. I'm keeping an arm's length distance from my sponsor. I am hanging out with old timers. Not at all. Not at all. I think there's an internal knowing in a lot of us that if I hang out with old timers, they're going to ask me to do something I don't want to do, and they're going to see through all my BS. So I'm just going to sidestep them and stay with people with different time. I can continue to play the game. I can act a role. And I've told this, you listen to my stories through the years, you know, he asked me how I'm doing. I had a pat answer. Life is good. Life is great. How you doing, Rick? Every day. Tony, how you doing? Life is good. Life is great. The subtle message, why wouldn't he? I'm Tony F. and Carr. Why wouldn't they? Come, look at me. Got it all. I'm rolling around with the 6-bedroom crib in Weston. I got the Porsche 911 Carrera convertible. It's got ground effects on it, the mahogany dash steering wheel. It looks like it's doing $130 when it's parked. I got the Rolex watch with all the fancy little dial things on it, the bezel, all that crap is. Diamond little things on it. I was never more miserable in my life. And God guides me into AA, and I play the same routine. I'm lying to my sponsor. You working on your first? Oh, yeah, absolutely, John. John P. You working on? Oh, yeah, absolutely. After about 4 months of that, he goes, Thursday night, he goes, you're meeting me Saturday morning at 7:15 at this park. Be there. Bring your fourth step. So from Saturday night at 7:15 till, you know, Saturday morning at 6:30, I'm working on my four step. I had done nothing for 4 months, telling him, I'm working on it. I'm bringing myself in to Alcoholics Anonymous, and you know, the ending's, you know, pretty easy to understand. I relapsed after 5 years, 9 months. You know, the really interesting thing is I knew after coming in here pretty short order when the fog clears that I've been chasing an endless, I've been on an endless chase trying to get satisfaction out of possessions and, you know, worldly clamor and worldly praise and all. I knew that. And then I proceeded to chase it at least at hard, if not harder, in sobriety. And after relapse, you know, I say that was good, fair, and appropriate. I got trashed pretty hard, and I got a pass from God, and I always thank God for giving me a second chance. I knew I deserved the first chance. Second chance, that's his business. I don't think I deserved it. I pissed all over this program and threw it away, but he decided to give me a second chance at a second chance. But I harmed the people that had a deep loving attachment to me, especially my oldest daughter. I absolutely crushed her. And with this relationship business, I got to tell you, years ago, me and Steve were talking, and he had a child coming along, and I told him the truth. I said, dude, I understand your head's going this way. This got to change. That's going to change. I feel this way. I feel that way. I said, when they hand you that beautiful little baby, it's all going to change. And I wasn't lying to you. I always wanted to be a dad, you know, and I remember I turned around when that Dr. Lewis handed me that baby. I turned around and he gently grabbed my shoulder and he said, could you turn around? We do this a lot, but we love to share these moments. My shoulders were shaking, man. I'm a big old rugby guy at the time, but I'm muscled up and everything. My shoulders are shaking. Tears are just streaming down my face. And I turned around and shared it with him. Why did being a dad, become so natural? From why was it so natural? I can't explain that to you. It's just natural. That is not the case with intimate relationships with men. That is not the case in you know, intimate relationships with women for me. And when I came back from relapse and I started hanging out with old timers, the realization hit me. I hadn't formed a single new friendship in 5 years, 9 months in Alcoholics Anonymous. What I had done is form a lot more acquaintances. But I'm still stiff-arming. I'm still playing the character. I'm still hiding behind, you know, a mask, a pretense. And I knew that had to stop. I knew that had to change. And I didn't know how to change it. I know one way. My one way is my way. That's the only way I know. But the knowing was there. See, my God, the God of my understanding, my higher power, gives me these nudges, you know, and it's just like, I can either listen to them or go out and get the shit kicked out of me again. I always have choices. And a lot of times I make the choice to go out and get the shit kicked out of me again until such time as the beating is enough for me to go, okay, I want to surrender. That may not be your path. That's been my path a lot in this program, or it was, where I just take horrendous beatings because I wouldn't listen. So I came back and recovered, and I realized I hadn't formed any new friendships, and I wanted to do that. But it had been a long time since I formed an intimate friendship. And a new part of that was I had to allow myself to start needing people. And so I had to write down the difference. I had a piece of paper in front of me. I had to write down the difference between allowing myself to need somebody. I'm telling you, I'm shaking right now because I'm talking about it and I'm feeling the feelings I was feeling. The difference between allowing myself to need somebody and being needy. And writing the needy down part was easy. Sniveling, weak, blah, 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 just, blah, 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 you know. And allowing myself to need somebody, I got hit with a wave of childlike fear. Like all of a sudden the lights go out in your place, you don't know, and you're small, and you just, I can't explain it to you other than I was hit with a wave of childlike fear, but I know I need to take a step forward. I know this is one of those points where I'm either going to bring something new to the table, or I'm going to experience what I've experienced. And I don't want to go back and drink, and I don't want to crush my daughter, and I don't want to do this. So I keep stepping forward, and it was horrible. It's horrible to write that down, but I started writing it down. And then I started sharing it. And then meetings, I started sharing about the things that made me feel small. Because I'm walking around, I came back from relapse, I started hanging out with old timers with a lot of time. And like a little kid, I started doing what they did. I just shut the hell up and started following them around, going to the meetings they were going to step series that they were doing, going to speaker meetings they're doing. And that's how I found out how much service they're doing. Because they don't run around yakking about it like I used to. And I was doing service, and everybody knew the service I was doing, because I'm telling y'all about the service I'm doing. And they're doing it quietly, and they're doing this, and they're reminding me that, hey, if you're doing service to get the accolades for it, you've already got your reward. But there's a different kind of reward, doing things altruistically. You know, you start learning. I can read the book. I'm not stupid. Not in all areas of my life. I'm stupid in a lot of areas of my life, but I'm not stupid. I can read the worst, but I had a hell of a time putting the concepts, putting the principles into practical application. That's why I say stuff like, I don't understand a quantum physics of this. I just know what works and what doesn't work for me. And I got a lot of stuff out of my first round of recovery and what doesn't work. And I got divorced, you know, when I came back from here, like I got divorced after 28 years of marriage, and you guys are, you know, suggesting I take some time off, and I didn't do that because we were living in separate bedrooms for over a year. You know, like, that's not taking a year off. That's not doing a reset. See, I'm still not listening in the journey. And so I set myself up for some beatings. You know, the beatings where you're sitting up at 5:30 at night and in the morning, and you got to get up at 6:30, and you're writing all this stuff down because they told you to write this stuff down. You're just scrolling it down, and you're out of your coconut, and you're just swirling like a gerbil on a wheel, and you can't get off the damn wheel, and it's all night long. You're just trying to find the solution. But I can't find the solution when I'm not willing to make the changes. I can't find the solution when I'm not willing to make the changes. So I had to start listening to other guys. I had to start, you know, putting aside my pride and ego that keeps telling me I know how to do this when I have no idea how to do this. And interesting started happening along the way. You know, book talks about a host of friends will spring up around you. The book does not say you have to go out and manufacture a bunch of friendships. It says a host of friends will spring up around you. That's exactly what happened. When I started telling the truth, when I stopped acting the part of somebody I'm not, when I stopped doing it, when I started telling the truth and sharing about things that made me feel strong, people started to know me as me, and they didn't, you know, scatter off. See, one of the things in my head is if they really knew me, they would not be my friend. And it's not like in the conscious, it's just in my being. I can't stop playing the role because that's who everybody loves. Listen, I got on a plane, through 3.5 hours, then drove 5 hours and go up to some BFE and get my spiritual cojones kicked in. This old man looked at me and he goes, ugh. You've been playing the dude so long, I think you actually believe you're the dude, and you've never been the dude. My hand came up, and I said, I got nothing. And my hand came down. The dude squared me up. I needed some old-timers in my life. I needed some old-timers. You know, I guess I gave him a gift, because at one point in our conversation, he looks at me and he goes, Tony Carr, you make me so glad I'm not where you're at anymore. Like a kid, I hung on to the anymore, because that means he's been where I've been and he's not here anymore, and he might be able to unlock some of these riddles for me. And the whole thing about the dude was powerful. And I still had to, all these years into recovery, I had to stop playing the dude. I have to start being authentic. I have to start being vulnerable. I have to start allowing myself to need somebody. And then these friends who sprang up around, we start living life together. You know, my sponsor was, I love you, Mike. I love you, Mike. My sponsor spent so many years trying to tell me we don't do AA to live a day. AA, we do AA to live a full and abundant and joyful life. And I kept trying to find a riddle by doing more and more and more and more AA. And they'd be like, what did you do that was fun and enjoyable and rewarding for Tony Carr today? And I said, well, I picked up another sponsee. No, that's not it. That's not it. I have hearing problems sometimes, not volume. I have hearing issues trying to hear what you're telling me. And that restricts my ability to have great relationships with people, intimate relationships with people. Why? Because I'm thinking a lot about myself. How's that manifest itself? I'm already getting my response ready before you even halfway through what you're saying. So I'm not hearing the message you're trying to give me. I'm not hearing what you're saying to me because my mind's already spinning on what's next. Or worse yet, I'm not listening to you because my brain's somewhere else. And, you know, you're like Charlie Brown's teacher. Wah, 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 wah. So I had to learn to start telling the truth. And I was coached and guided into telling the truth. See, I'm one of those weak men that doesn't understand the difference between infatuation and love. And why I sit here at this advanced age and say that to you, it's only because it's truth. I didn't know this till maybe 3 years ago. I thought infatuation was absolutely love. And here I am bending myself and twisting myself and molding myself to make me indispensable to you so you will not leave. That's what's up. That's what's up. I can sugarcoat that. I can paint that. And I did for a long time. No, man, I'm a helpful guy. I'm a loving guy. I'm a, that same old guy. God, thank you, God, for asking me to be brutally honest because I needed that little nudge this morning, but we're having one. I had to go back like 3 weeks later after seeing him for 3 or 4 days or 5 days, whatever. And I had to go back like 2 weeks later because there was something missing. So I get back on a plane, fly out there, 3.5 hours, drive five and a half hours, all that crap. He said, what I want you to do is I want you to, got these two books by PM Meadow on codependency.
Gotcha.
I'm thinking in my head. I don't say this out loud. Gotcha. I said, I actually, you know, when I was still married, our marriage counselor that with the last marriage counselor we went to, she suggested that we buy these two books by PM Meadow, by my wife, buy them and read them. She didn't buy them. So I bought them and I put them out on a coffee table. I sat there for a month and she didn't read them. So I picked them up and I probably read both of them twice. And I got this lovely little grin on my face because I'm better than, right? And he goes, oh my God, it's worse than I thought. You know, my brother Ed O'Rourke likes to say brace for impact. That was a brace for impact moment. And he goes, oh my God, you mean that you read by your own admission two books on codependency twice, each twice? Never seeing yourself in any of that because your concentration was entirely on your now ex-wife. I got nothing. See, my disease is powerful. My disease is still trying to lie to me. My disease, and how do I get out of that? I get out of that is one step listening to the, you know, the manufacturer of fear and all that stuff. Cause my brain's always trying to drag me into the future, drag me into the past. One creates fear and anxiety. The other creates guilt, shame, remorse. Until I start getting healthy, until I start getting honest, until I start learning how to look at myself as I believe God looks at me. See, this God of mine has infinite love. It's unvariable. This is my relationship. It's unvariable. And by that, I mean, I can't break the love of God. That will never happen. I may be disappointing in moments. I may be weak in moments. I may be many, many things, but I cannot break the love of the God that I understand. And what I'm asked to do on a daily basis is share that love. And that love has nothing to do with judgment of others, separation from others, being better than others, being worse than others. It has everything to do with getting in touch with the oneness. And as I started being gentler on myself, a couple guys younger, and I'm glad you're here. As I start, I want you to hear this because I had no idea. I always thought I did better with a size 12 boot up my backside. When I started being gentler with myself, I started being gentler with other people around me. And in that, my relationship started changing. The energy I had started changing. The love I was able to express started sharing. The love I was able to receive started changing. And I had to experience that. And I had to experience that fear back when I'm writing down the difference between allowing myself to need somebody and being needy. And I had to walk that journey and I had to take the steps one step at a time. And how's it rolling today? What's it look like today? You know, my relationship with my kids have never been better. I got a 34-year-old daughter, a 33-year-old son, a 25-year-old daughter and 8-year-old granddaughter. And my granddaughter thinks I hung the moon, man. Again, my voice gets shaky. You know, who's got it better than us, right? And my kids. I mean, we talk about life. We talk about struggles. We talk about success. We talk about all of it. And they count on their dad because of what God and you guys in Program of Alcoholics Anonymous has done with me and for me and through me. You know, until my sponsees, if you do this thing fearlessly and thoroughly, and we get the emotional sobriety part, and you summon the courage. And some people disagree with me, but I'm telling you, point blank for me, it took courage to do some of this work because a big part of me did not want to do this work. I just wanted to continue on. I did not want to become vulnerable. I did not want to talk about the things in meetings and with other guys that made me feel small. That's code word for non-manly. My definition of non-manly, because back at that period of time, my manliness was about strength, physical strength, stoicism, all this shit. All this shit. I'm still connected to John Wayneism. And you hear guys talking about true manliness. Stopping to help a homeless guy. Taking care of a retired, battered up old priest. Praying with him. Meditating with him. Shaving their beard. That's manliness. That's the stuff we do. We take care of people that need taken care of. And we become brothers in this program. And there is a bond in here that I did not have with my biological family. So you guys became my family of choice. And all this work and all these spiritual ball breaking and stuff that's gone on through the years have put me in a position where you can have a friend because I've become a friend that I would like to have. I became a dad that I wanted to have stability. My kids know without doubt that they cannot break my love for them. They can do some things that would be shocking and horrible and all that, but they cannot break the love I have for them. And they know if everything goes to shit, they know they got the dad to count on. Because they know their dad's tied in tight with God. Tell my guys, I don't take a half day off. I got so much respect for this disease. Not that I won't drink today, but I can start drifting today like that. My alcoholism can flip. It'll not be alcohol today. It'll be women. It'll be this. It'll be that. It'll be chasing the worldly clamor, overworking, focusing on a pay. I mean, this. Trust me, I'm a whore. And today I'm a whore among sores, so I guess I'm at home. But I'm a whore. It will flip to something else. So I got to stay vigilant. And how I do that is by leaning into God. What do I mean by that? I'll shut up in just a second. So I told you I was a religious guy, every week goer, part of the men's organization, all this stuff, right? 8 years, no, shit, almost 10 years ago, 9 years ago, I learned that I did not know how to lean into God. Jimmy V asked me to speak at Westside. And I said, fine, what's the topic? He goes, emotional sobriety. I said, you do realize you called Tony Carr. He goes, what are you, an idiot? I know I called you. I said, no, I'm being serious. I thought you were calling somebody else. And I was going through it. My marriage was crumbling. My back was blown out. I was having big issues at work and a couple other things. And my daughter's going down to Joe DiMaggio. They're going to draw bone marrow from her to see if she had leukemia, which ultimately she did not. But obviously, at that point, I didn't know it, and man, there's a lot going on. And I did something I never do. I was writing down a list of what I was going to talk about, what was going on. And as I wrote down, marriage is crumbling, my back is blown out. I started getting a pressure on my chest, and the pressure started getting greater and greater. And by the time I got to the fourth one, it felt like an elephant was sitting on my chest. I never experienced an anxiety attack, but I believe that was akin to what I was having. And I can't, I'm labored to take a breath. There's so much pressure on me. I'm labored to take a breath. And I look down at that list and it just popped in my head that I'm writing this crap down like I'm handling it. And I reached for it. I grabbed that paper and I ripped it up and I shredded it and I threw it away. It's fascinating to me. In that moment, while I'm writing this stuff down, it felt like I had to handle all of them, which is not what was going on. every day I was walking with God and with AA and my brothers in AA on this journey of trying to handle this stuff just one day at a time, just one day at a time. And when I write it down, it all squared up on me and it was entirely unmanageable. I could not do it. I couldn't handle two or three of those, let alone the five or six things that were going on. And there it is. And years, so I surrendered to work to God because I had things to do. And he's asked me to do more service. And I said, all right, I'll do more service, but I got to turn the job over to you. I can't work these hours. So I got to cut my hours by 30% to do this and that and this and that. And I'm going to do it. And I'm going to see what you got for me. And 9 years later, I've never looked back to take the wheels back on my career and my work. I do the work God does planning. And another time we can talk about it, maybe one-on-one. Because that was not by my own device. I had no options. You know what I mean? I had no options. I couldn't handle it. So I turned it over to God because I felt like that's the only option I had at that time. So I turned it over. And years later with relationships, you know, two things struck me. One, I'm doing the same thing that I used to do with alcohol before I came into AA, and especially before I came back from relapse. I'm trying single-handed combat against my character defects that are run by fears. And I'm losing again. The only thing I'm doing is making it worse. My sponsor's laughing his ass off because he's heard this rip for years, right? And that's a beautiful journey. It's a beautiful journey as long as we continue to get up off the mat and keep stepping forward. And then the change starts coming. And I go, you know, I make my amends to God. And I said, you know what? I did it again. I did it again. I made my own choices again. I want what I want when I want it. It is time to grow the up. I'm going to work on that, and I'm going to claim your grace, and I'm going to claim your strength. And today I'm going to work on growing up and not looking for things that aren't, you don't designate or design for me. I'm going to work on growing up and becoming disciplined, because my entire life I'm reaching for stuff that does not belong to me, that wasn't laid on me by God. And I keep ending up in the same places, the same emotional crushing place. You're a piece of shit. You don't measure up. You're never going to measure up. And by the grace of God, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and some really strong men, I haven't felt that way in like 3-4 years. That stuff drifted away. You know, I ain't much, but I'm sufficient. I've always measured up. I just didn't know it. There were messages I heard, misunderstood, and misinterpreted that I accepted as fact. I've always been good enough. Only by the grace of God, but that's all I need. I can't work my way into being good enough. I can't magically change myself into being good enough. And if you're having problems with that, let me leave you with one thought. What happened to the obsession for the alcohol? What happened to the obsession for the drugs? I can get my head around the fact that I don't pick up a drink or a drug because I can be in this program. And just one day not, but where did the obsession go that ruled me every day, all the time? For me, that's a God thing. God removed that. And I believe he'll remove the other character defects that we have, but he's a gentleman. He's got to wait for me to say, I need your help. God bless you guys.